A collection of yellow bowls is making its way across the country. You may have heard about it, an art exhibit with a message. HPR's Noe Tanigawa here this morning to tell us all about it. Good morning.
Thanks, Catherine. Well, here's how Setsuko Sato Winchester's Yellow Bowl Project works, okay? She places her handmade yellow tea bowls at sites that are symbolic for immigrant justice. Her work and the photographs then bring attention to the issues of immigration and naturalization. And she visited Honouliuli. That's Hawaii's largest and longest-running camp. She was here last week for that. Now, you know, people know what happened there, right? People of Japanese ancestry were targeted and removed from society through a presidential executive order. That's really important to remember. The justification was national security. And at Honouliuli, by the numbers, 4,000 prisoners of war, and they were pretty much Japanese, Koreans, Okinawans, and a few Italians. There were 2,000 approximately number of Hawaii detainees there at Honouliuli, and about two-thirds of those were American citizens. There were 8 women there, and one thing they had in common was that they all studied the Shinto religion. And we get to 0, and that is the number of people who were ever tried or convicted of any charges there. But what's informative is that 343 people of Japanese ancestry were picked up within a couple of days of Pearl Harbor. And you just think, how were they so efficient about getting these people? A sample detention list had been prepared in 1937. Wow. Newspaper chains that were run by Randolph Hearst and others had been promoting a yellow peril kind of hysteria on the continent, and claims of national security took root in that kind of atmosphere.
So by 1941, there were over 800 pieces of legislation, federal, state, and local, written against Asian peoples. While other groups have slowly integrated and become American, you know, whether it's Italians, Germans were not considered American, you know, Italians weren't considered American, Irish were not. But there was never any law that excludes Irish. But there were laws against Black people. There are laws against Asian people. So when it is the law of the land, it's the government that has to go after you, right? The government can't protect you.
That's Setsuko Winchester. Really interesting. She has a degree in journalism, used to work for NPR in Washington. And she just gave a lot of background on the kind of atmosphere there was at that time that would really make you ask yourself, what were people supposed to do? I mean, when they got this order from the Western Defense Command and Fourth Army, it read, instructions to all persons of Japanese ancestry. All Japanese persons, both alien and non-alien, will be evacuated from this designated area by 12 noon, Tuesday, April 7th. That's what one of the notices read. And in Hawaii, well, a third of the population was Japanese, so mass incarceration would not have worked too well. Like 90% of the carpenters at that time were Japanese. They couldn't build a barracks for them. So they were really selective about who they took in here in Hawaii, and that made it really scary, and it really kind of changed the social dynamic. You know, I mean, Catherine, what if, here I am sitting next to you, what if one day I'm just gone? Would you kind of wonder what happened and what I had done?
Yes, I was at a screening. Bar Association did a screening of the film, and then they came for us. And one of the ladies mentioned that she had an aunt that was on her way from Maui, I think, to go to college in St. Louis. And on her way over, she was taken then to an internment camp. So instead of college, she went to a camp.
People were honestly grabbed off the street, and it's really something that comes alive when you hear what they wrote about it, which is what the docents from the Japanese Cultural Center are so good at. We went out there with a couple of their champion docents. Let me tell you, Honouliuli, when you go there, the valley, the sides seem really steep, and it's just covered with haulikoa and stuff all over, and there's a rutted road that you can go in on. You can stand on these concrete slabs there that are the former barracks, the former mess hall, and it's all above Honouliuli Stream. I wanted to let you hear Jane Kurahara, one of the docents, sharing from Jack Yoshikami's memoir. He was picked up, just pulled out of his house after a day at work, and this is what he said about the hearing he faced after his arrest.
Interrogation by the authorities started with various questions about my personal background, eventually ending with a question, "Do you think it is better for Japan to win this war?" If I answered it was better for Japan to win, I would be sent to the detention center as an enemy alien. If I answered I like America to win, they would insistently say, "Don't lie. I know you're really praying for Japan to win."
Uh-huh. You forget that those kinds of interrogations happen. We have to ask ourselves what we would do at every turn. I mean, volunteer Betsy Fujii Young led us down to the stream over there and painted the scene of how the camp would have looked all around us. And she shared some inspiring words from former U.S. Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta.
Norman Mineta says, "This is not about the past. This is about the future, because history has already had the ability to repeat itself. What you are doing here is drawing that line in the sand to say that never again will these things happen to anyone."
Yellow peril, yes.
Yeah. I mean, really, it makes you think out there. They share poems and even a song that was written after somebody had visited out there at Honolulu. They take people out once a month. You can sign up for this tour, and it really is the only way to visit Honolulu right now. It's a National Historic Site, which is super cool because the National Park Service, we met a representative this time out there, and they're so behind the sharing of this story and are working right now on the groundwork to make it more available for people. Right now, you can go there through tours with the Japanese Cultural Center. They've also made a curriculum for high school students on this, and they've got a really good education sort of section of their website, as well as a permanent exhibit that's at the Cultural Center on Beretania Street.
Yeah, I know it's a great site, a learning site. I know there are kids, I think, from MidPack Institute that were out there mapping the area, you know, so it's all a part of the curriculum to keep that history alive, because it is about the future, not so much about the past.
Exactly. You know, it makes me wonder if there are things already happening that are setting the stage for the kinds of things that happened in that time. Oh, and one last thing. You know, it's such a great moment at the end of the visit to be able to walk down to the stream. And in this case, Betsy helped us just place ourselves with the mess hall there and various people's memories, and even a poem was read down there at the stream. And she played a song that someone had written after visiting Honolulu. We gathered and they passed out rose petals, and we tossed them into Honolulu stream, thinking about the words of Norman Mineta.
Thank you, Noe Tanigawa. Interesting story. That was HPR's Noe Tanigawa. You can check out her features on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.